In this episode, I go into excruciating detail about two proposed Ohio laws that would prohibit the teaching or even acknowledgement of racism and sexism because it makes the people who've benefited from both very sad. Then I tell you about the latest fight over abortion happening in an empty parking lot in Toledo. And then finally, I get to introduce you to the new theme music that we're using for this podcast. I'm Doug Berger, and this is Secular Left. Before I get into the meat of today's episode, I wanted to introduce you to the music that we are now using here at Secular Left. That's the music you hear in the background. I composed it. It's called Dank and Nasty, and I composed it using sound loops found on Amplify Music. They have a program called Amplify Studio. I'm not recommending it as the end-all or be-all of music composition software. But basically, since this podcast started, I was using music from filmmusic.io, which is royalty-free. You just have to give the composer credit, and that was great. And then I was in a podcast conference a few weeks ago, and they were talking about music for, you know, theme music for your podcast, and they were talking about a lot of these royalty-free places where you can get music. It's available to everybody. And so eventually, you're going to hear your theme music on somebody else's video or podcast. So basically, there's nothing unique. And they were talking about this program called Amplify Studio that takes drum loops, guitar loops, keyboard loops, and you can fit them together and mix them together, and there's different genres. There's hip-hop, techno, chill. I kind of wish there would have been like some jazz, like some real jazz, because I might want to do that. But anyway, so I was messing around with this program, and it's very simple to use. You just plug in the sounds into your track, and once it's done, you can save it as a MP3. If you have, they have a premium that has more sounds available. They have a premium membership, and then you can save it as a WAV file. The program works for PC and for Mac, so no matter what you use. And so I would recommend, if you're looking for if you're not musical and you don't know somebody who can write you theme music for your podcast, I would try this Amplify Studio. So I just want to introduce that the first thing here, that this is the theme music that you're going to be hearing from now on in this podcast. It's called Dank and Nasty. Enjoy. This is Secular Left. Now that the COVID-19 pandemic is over in Ohio, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and most of the restrictions that we'd been under have been removed, the Ohio State Legislature can now return to the work that they were doing or that they've always done. And that is taking away more people's rights, sticking it to poor people, and trying to police what is being taught in the schools. And so I wanted to talk about that first. There are two bills under consideration in the Ohio House. House Bill 322 and House Bill 327. And I'm going to start with House Bill 327. The first thing I want to do is talk about the people who co-sponsored. It was sponsored by Diane Grendel, who's a representative from District 76, and Sarah Fowler, author from District 99. And I don't know if I have talked about Grendel before. She's a wackaloon, what we call a wackaloon. She was a conspiracy theorist for COVID, against a man, any of the mandates, the mask mandates. I believe one of the things during a House testimony for the law that would stop the governor from doing public health orders, she claimed that you breathed in carbon monoxide from your mask, whatever. She's a wackaloon. Sarah Fowler Arthur is another person I've talked about in my blog when Secular Left was just strictly a blog. She was, for several years, a member of the State Board of Education. She does not have any experience in public schools. She was homeschooled. She is married to a man who has a physics degree. He has a doctorate, and he does YouTube videos, YouTube science videos that aren't that great. I've asked around to science communicators that I know who are familiar with this man's work, and they kind of are out there. They're a little bit out there. But anyway, so Sarah, she is homeschooled, and she is co-sponsoring this legislation that would police what is taught in the public schools, which I just find highly ironic. But House Bill 327 would ban the teaching of, quote, divisive concepts, unquote, in K through 12 schools, state institutions of higher learning, political subdivisions, and state agencies. Now, it's interesting that they would include political subdivision of state agencies. So not only are they trying to ban these topics from schools, but they're trying to ban cities and villages from talking about these subjects and state agencies. So under the bill, divisive concepts as defined by the bill include any of the following. The concept that one nationality, race, color, ethnicity, religion, or sex is inherently superior to another nationality, race, color, ethnicity, religion, or sex. That sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Of course, the people that I got this information from that study the bill has talked to other legislators, and they say that particular concept, banning that concept, could actually ban discussions of Black Lives Matter, which they claim makes other races feel inferior. And that's the key to all of this, is it's white people feeling uncomfortable about being called racist. And you'll see that all the way through these bills. And I'll have this document I'm looking at, I'll have it put on as a PDF and put in the show notes so everybody can take a look at it. One of the other concepts that it's going to ban is the concept that the United States is fundamentally racist or sexist. It would also include institutional racism and sexism, systemic racism, and the historical truth that the U.S. was built by slavery. So this is a direct slam against that 1619 project that you'll hear conservatives whine and complain about. Another concept that it's going to ban is that an individual, by virtue of the individual's nationality, race, color, ethnicity, religion, or sex, is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive, whether consciously or unconsciously. And so some of the legislators say that would include concepts like talking about white or male privilege. See, again, this is getting rid of stuff that white people feel uncomfortable with. And to tell you the truth, nobody is going around saying that white people are inherently racist or sexist. What they're saying is that they have benefited from an inherently racist and sexist system that was created by their ancestors and that is maintained by many people today. So just because you think you're not racist doesn't mean that you haven't benefited from it. That's what white privilege means. It doesn't necessarily mean that you got a free pass for everything. It means that that when you've had tough times, it's still much better than the tough times people of color have had. Another concept that it's going to ban is that the individual, by virtue of the individual's nationality, race, color, ethnicity, religion, or sex, bears responsibility for actions committed in the past by other members of the same nationality, race, color, ethnicity, religion, or sex. And in the notes, it says, it would likely prevent or restrict discussions about addressing prejudice in the law, redlining, reparations, cycle of poverty, criminal justice reform, drug war, desegregating schools, etc. That's probably about as close as banning critical race theory as you're going to get, even though they don't know what that actually means. And to tell you the truth, people aren't going around saying that white people bear responsibility for actions committed in the past. It's not that they bear responsibility. It's just that they're being asked to undo the actions committed in the past. That's not the same as, like, let's say my grandpa was a racist and did something to prevent somebody from joining his golf club. And because of inheritance, I inherited the golf club. Well, my responsibility is to undo his actions that he did in the past. So I remove that rule and I let everybody in. You know, I'm not responsible for what my grandpa did in the 1920s or 30s, but I bear responsibility for resolving that or for doing that. That's what people of color are asking for white people to do, is to use your privilege that you have just by the basis of being white and use it to undo some of the systemic racism. And then it says the other thing it's going to do is going to ban is any other form of race or sex stereotyping or any other form of race or sex scapegoating. And so there is some concern by people that have seen this law that it would ban women's studies, black history courses, etc. So those are the divisive concepts that they want to get rid of. And there's more. There's like 9 of them. I'm not going to read every single one. And then it goes through to the next section, K-12 education. And it says that no school district, charter school, STEM school, or non-public school that enrolls students in a state scholarship program would be allowed to teach, train, promote professional development in any divisive concept. And no school district, school, or building would be allowed to require a student to advocate for or against a specific topic or point of view for class credit. This would apply to every subject area for any coursework or for graduation credit. Exceptions would be public speaking, speech, or formal debate classes. All right. Well, that to me, on the face of it, that first part about no school district would be allowed to teach these divisive concepts, on the face of it, just looking at it, and I'm not a lawyer, that looks like that violates the teacher's First Amendment rights. And it also violates local control of a school district to decide their curriculum, what specific parts of the curriculum they're going to teach. Because this isn't about curriculum. This is about content of the curriculum. You know, what it reminded me of is school districts trying to force, not school districts, but the state trying to force school districts to teach abstinence, or trying to teach creation science instead of evolution. Now, forcing them to teach abstinence, that pretty much passed court muster because that's not taking a side or anything. That's just a subject. However, the creation science was ruled to be unconstitutional because it wasn't based on any actual science. So forcing a teacher to teach it was violating their religious freedom and violating the First Amendment that you don't mix religion in the public schools. I think that this part where they would prevent teachers from teaching these concepts would violate the First Amendment because it's a government prohibiting a specific content of speech. But we don't know. It's going to be in a school district, so we're not sure, you know, how that's going to turn out, or even if it'll get passed. As I said, these laws are being considered right now. And then the other thing, too, is the other thing that bothers me about this bill, besides the fact that the Department of Education would be required to withhold state funding if a school district violated this law, going from first offense at 25% to third offense, 100% of state funding, was that parents and guardians of any student who is subjected to indoctrination of divisive concepts could sue. They could bring a civil action against the school district. That is so vague and open to interpretation. It's not even funny. Subjected to indoctrination. That's a conservative buzzword, indoctrination. You could say that anything you learn in school is you're being indoctrinated. But usually what they mean is if they disagree with it, it's indoctrination. Now, we move on to a higher education. Now, usually in colleges, a lot of these curriculum stuff doesn't apply to colleges because usually colleges, you're all adults, you're more open to studying what you want to study. However, in this bill, it says no state institution of higher education could offer teaching training on divisive concepts to any professors, employees, contractors, staff members, or, quote, any other individual or group, unquote. And then they go on and they say that no money shall be expended by any state institution of higher education in support or promotion of any divisive concept. So a college could not have a Black Lives Matter day. They couldn't have support a woman's Women's Month, Black History Month. Yeah. That's what this law says. And so the State Board of Education would have to determine if schools were complying with this law and file a report each year. And then it says the law would also apply to state agencies and political subdivisions. State agency means every organized body, office, or agency established by the laws of the state for the exercise of any function of state government, the Public Employees Retirement System, the Ohio Police and Fire Pension Fund, the State Teachers Retirement System, the School Employees Retirement System, and the State Highway Patrol Retirement System. No state agency or political subdivision could offer teaching, instruction, or training on divisive concepts. Now, and it goes on from there, but what I want to point out is divisive concepts is something that they're defining in this law. And on a lot of these things that they're wrong, as I pointed out, they're wrong. You know, nobody is claiming that a white person is responsible for what their uncles did 100 years ago. Okay, now we're going to move on to House Bill 322. Basically, that says that no state agency, school district, or school administration shall require a teacher to discuss current events or widely debated and currently controversial issues of public policy or social affairs. Teachers who choose to discuss current events or widely debated and currently controversial issues of public policy or social affairs should look at both sides of the issues. In any course on history, civics, United States government, politics, social studies, or similar subject area, no school district would be able to assign or give credit for any of the following: association with any organization engaged in lobbying or legislation at the local, state, or federal level, or in social and public policy advocacy, lobbying for legislation at local, state, or federal level, any practicum, action project, or similar activity that involves social or public policy advocacy. No state agency or school district shall accept private funding for curriculum development, materials, teacher training, professional development training, pertaining to courses on history, civics, United States government, politics, social studies, or similar subject areas. So basically what this means, it would prevent, to use an example, Black Lives Matter. If they wanted to come in and teach a class, they would not be allowed to. They would not be allowed to provide any materials for a teacher to teach it. And in fact, it has a list. It says no school or state agency could teach any of the following concepts. And it repeats a lot of what I talked about earlier in House Bill 327. An individual's moral standing or worth is necessarily determined by the individual's race or sex. That sounds reasonable. An individual should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment solely or partly because of the individual's race. That sounds reasonable, doesn't it? One race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex. Okay, and with respect to the relationship to American values, slavery and racism are anything other than deviations from, betrayals of, or failures to live up to authentic founding principles of the United States, which include liberty and equality. I'm sorry, that made me laugh. They just don't realize how hypocritical that sounds. You know, you can't teach a concept that slavery and racism are anything other than deviations from, betrayals of, or failures to live up to the authentic founding principles, which include liberty and equality, which we know for a fact that was not true. It was liberty and equality for white men who owned property. That is the truth. That is the real history of the United States. The reason why they broke away from England was because of taxes. It wasn't because they wanted to do what they wanted to do. They wanted freedom and liberty and equality. They wanted to be protected from the oppressive taxes that were being charged to them by the United Kingdom. And in fact, the founding of the country, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution, at the time that they were written, only applied to white men who owned property. It did not apply to women. It did not apply to slaves. It did not apply to indentured servants, which were basically white people who could actually leave their servitude at the conclusion of their contract. Because they actually had a contract. That's how much the founders appreciated slavery, is if it was a white person being a slave, they had a contract. Black people did not. They did not have a choice. They were forced to come here. And this country became prosperous on the backs of black people. That is the truth. And you can prevent it being taught in the schools, and it will still be true. If you prevent it to be taught in the schools, then you are being a racist and a bigot and a snowflake. But that is what our Ohio legislature is currently working on. And these two bills, I believe, are in committee right now being discussed. And the fact that they're being considered by a wackaloon who's anti-government and somebody who was homeschooled, that just puts icing on the cake. And so you should check those out. For more information about any of the topics covered in this episode, check out our show notes at secularleft.us. At the corner of West Sylvania and North Haven streets here in Toledo is Northwestern Ohio's last abortion clinic. It's been struggling recently from people who want to regulate it out of existence at the State House and people who protest outside the clinic anytime that the clinic is open, trying to harass the women that choose to go to the clinic. And so it's a bone of contention. And I'm not sure if I had talked about this before, but the city of Toledo introduced an ordinance this year to protect patients who are using this clinic. Not specifically, I mean, it's written in general. Because of the location of the clinic, which fronts West Sylvania Avenue and is a little bit more than a car length away from the sidewalk, for years, patients who have stopped at the clinic have been targeted and harassed by anti-abortion protesters. Because the distance is so close, they've been able to come onto the clinic's property, harass the women, and then skedaddle back to the sidewalk before police would show up. And then the police would show up and say, "What do you want us to do? They're not on your property anymore." And so this has been a give and take back and forth for many years. On the east of the clinic, across North Haven, sits an empty parking lot. And it's been empty. It's been a parking lot. It's been for sale for over 20 years, according to a report. And earlier this year, and the sale closed in March, the owners of that parking lot sold it to the anti-abortion group Foundation for Life. And so that has sparked some heated arguments about that. And just to kind of give a background about this issue, I have a clip, an audio clip of a recent news report from WTVG, which is a local station in Toledo, and talking about the sale of the parking lot. Here's that news clip.
This rundown parking lot full of gravel and potholes just may be the most sought after place in the city. It's all about location.
Our job isn't to make their job any easier.
I never expect them to do the right thing or the moral thing.
This parking lot on the corner of Sylvania and North Haven is just steps away from Capital Care, Toledo's only abortion clinic.
So we often have patients that park over there, mostly by mistake.
Escorts used to meet patients at their cars and shuttle them past pro-life sidewalk advocates like Bob Schoen.
They'll change their minds. So we know that it's not going to be many, but it doesn't have to be many for us. We want to help the ones that we can.
But escorts are no longer allowed on this land since it was purchased by Foundation for Life, a pro-life group. The group made an offer in February. Around that time, the city council introduced the patient safety ordinance, which would ban protesters from approaching patients. But the foundation can talk to anyone on their own property.
I thought if we own the property, that would be another reason for the unconstitutionality of the ordinance itself.
Councilman Nick Comives, who introduced the ordinance, in a phone call with 13ABC, referred to the purchase as a petty move. And Capital Care says that their landlord was also attempting to buy the lot. The land was owned by Superior Uniform Sales, whose owner declined to be recorded. But in a conversation with 13ABC, he says the clinic's landlord never identified himself as such. And he sold to the foundation after the clinic's landlord didn't counter. Kristen Haiti with Capital Care says she doesn't buy it.
I'm more so, I think, angry that private businesses like Superior Uniform Sales will use their money and their power to directly facilitate patient harassment and make them less safe.
And that was a report from Kayla Molander. I do want to nitpick a little bit on the coverage. And we had this before. Earlier this year, as I said, when the city introduced the ordinance to protect patients using the clinic, the Foundation for Life had this press conference where they complained about it, said it was unconstitutional. without it being through a court system yet. They just assumed it was. And the gentleman from the Toledo Archdiocese, Peter Range, I believe his name was, actually was pleased with himself that they were able to harass women. And basically what they would do is women would get out of their cars at the clinic and they would try to convince them not to get an abortion. The women would tell them to get lost. They would come at them again. They would tell them to get lost. They would come at them again. And by that time, the clinic escorts have had to, got them inside the building. And he seemed pleased as punch that he was able to do that. So the ordinance is needed, definitely needed. But in the coverage of that, the news stations, WTVG was one of them, they bought into the false narrative that these protesters are sidewalk advocates. If you noticed in that Kayla Molander report, the one guy was interviewed in the graphics on the screen, and she even called him a sidewalk advocate. They are not advocates. They are not advocates for the women. They're not trying to help the women. They are trying to prevent her from exercising her legal right to an abortion. They are trying to deny her that right by browbeating her, intimidating her, making her trying to feel guilty, and harassing her. And so make no mistake that these protesters are protesters. They are not advocates. So I just want to make that clear right now. These are not some people off the street like, oh, we're just trying to protect the women. No, they are not trying to protect the women. Anyway, so the interesting thing about this parking lot, and I've had personal experience with the clinic. I've helped facilitate support of the clinic when they were in danger of closing due to excessive state regulations. I participated in a protest trying to get ProMedica Hospital to sign a transfer agreement, which great. It was, they did it, and it was great because that kept the clinic from closing because the state had regulated it to where public hospitals that received state funding and couldn't sign these transfer agreements. And of course, the biggest, one of the biggest hospital systems we have here in Toledo is Mercy Health. So they would never, they were never going to sign a transfer agreement. And so ProMedica Toledo Hospital was the last resort and they did. So I'm familiar with this clinic. I'm familiar with the protesters, the harassers that harass these women on a, I'm not going to say daily basis because the clinic's not open every single day, but when the clinic is open, they're there, they harass these women. And this parking lot has been vacant for, as the report said, more than 20 years, or hasn't been, nothing's been done with it. But the previous owners, Superior Uniform Sales, has allowed religious groups to congregate on this parking lot, allow them to park there. This was their base of operations for harassing the women at the clinic. And as the report said, sometimes clinic patients would mistakenly park at this parking lot because it's the only place in that general vicinity besides the clinic that you can legally park. If you park across the street, you could get towed. If you park on the street, sometimes there's no room. And so people would mistakenly park there. So that Ed Sitter, who's the executive director of Foundation for Life, says that that ordinance, that patient protection ordinance, would no longer apply to them because they would be on their own land. And that's true. But the distance would still apply. So they would have to make it so that the women would park on their land and then they could harass them all they want until they crossed over into the clinic area. But as what I was saying, I'm sorry, I got off track there for a moment. So this parking lot, the Superior Uniform Sales has been allowing these religious groups to use this parking lot for years. I had heard that they actually leased it, but I'm not sure. I'm not aware. I'm assuming that they probably got very favorable rates if they leased it. I don't think that they did. I think it was more of a verbal agreement than money actually changing hands. And so this parking lot also has an anti-abortion billboard that's been there for years. And so that company, that Superior Uniform Sales, is getting money from an anti-abortion message. So this company, and they claim that the offer wasn't countered. I looked in the Lucas County property records. The last two times that property was sold, in 2002 and 2018, it was sold for $70,000. And the sale in 2018 was an internal sale. The people that own Superior Uniform Sales bought it from another company that the family controlled, and they also paid $70,000 for an internal sale. And so the Foundation for Life, they only paid $35,000 for that property. So Superior Uniform Sales sold it at a loss. And so that's why the person from Capital Care that you hear in the news report, Kristen Hattie, was talking about that, you know, that Superior Uniform Sales was using their money to harass women because they sold that property at a loss just so the harassers would not have to be go by the ordinance should it pass, the Toledo City Ordinance. So when this happened in one of the, it got posted on Facebook or somewhere in social media, and I made the comment that, you know, maybe somebody should open up a strip club across from Rosary Cathedral, which is the main church for the Toledo Archdiocese here in Toledo. And somebody rightfully pointed out to me that that was illegal. And they're right, because here in Ohio, and I'm sure in many places, there is zoning regulations that limit what can be built next to a church or a school. You can't open up a bar next to a church. You can't open up a strip club next to a church. I'm not sure what all other kinds of business properties can't open next to a church or a school. But that just goes to show you how insidious religious privileges in this country today, that a religious group can set up shop across the street from an abortion clinic and interfere with somebody's legal right to make their own choices for reproductive health. And somebody else can't open up a strip club across the street from a church so that people can exercise their legal right to watch scantily clad women dancing and get their $10 buffet. And so that's how it is in this country, is that religious people are given special consideration, and it can harm other people who are trying to exercise the rights that are set in the Bill of Rights and in legal terms and law. And how anyone can think that that's right. And I get it. These anti-abortionists, they think that they're doing a good thing, that they're saving babies, but they're doing it at the expense of the women. And all this stuff that they talk about, you know, talking to the women and supporting the women and trying to help them. It's all malarkey. What they're trying to do is they're trying to prevent an abortion. That's all they're trying to do. And once you do, and once they convince somebody not to have an abortion, good luck trying to get any help from them in the future. They claim that they help women and get them diapers and baby food and things like that. But, you know, for parents out there, and most rational people know that when you have a child, there is a lot more work and a lot more cost to it than a package of diapers and baby food. You know, it's a long-term commitment. And many of these right-to-life people don't care about that long-term commitment as long as they're doing God's work to stop a baby being killed. That's the way that they look at it. You know, they ignore the science, they ignore the legal consensus that a human baby is not a human with rights until it is able to live outside the womb. You know, that's not a hard concept to come up with. That's what's called viability. And the legal ramifications of abortion is that you can't ban it for less than the time for viability. And when you try to do that, that's when it puts an undue burden on the women. And so the Foundation for Life got a sweetheart deal for this parking lot so that they can set up shop and not have to worry about any legal ramifications of harassing women for the people that mistakenly park in this parking lot. So what I am proposing is that when you go to this clinic, do not park in the parking lot east of North Haven Avenue, across from the, I believe it's a Family Dollar store. Do not park in that parking lot for whatever reason. In fact, I would probably propose that people that support the clinic should park in that parking lot and fill it up so that nobody else can park there. But that's what I would do, besides opening up a strip club across from the Catholic Church. Now that Toledo City Ordinance to protect patients hasn't come up for a vote yet. It's still under consideration. I hope it gets passed because it is needed. You know, the people that harass these women, they'll come on the property, harass the women, leave the property, and then nothing ever happens to them. And I think there should be legal consequences. I mean, how would you like it if you were at your doctor's office and somebody came up to you and was persistent and wanted you not to go into that doctor's office? You would get upset. You know, what business is it of theirs to keep you from going to your doctor? And that's what these people do. They're not advocates. They're not out looking to help the women. They're just out there to facilitate their religious agenda, their extreme religious agenda, and prevent people from exercising their legal right to make their own healthcare choices. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can check out more information, including links to sources used, in our show notes on our website at secularleft.us. Secular Left is hosted, written, and produced by Doug Berger, and he is solely responsible for the content. Send us your comments, either using the contact form on the website or by sending us a note at comments@secularleft.us. Our theme music is Dank and Nasty, composed using Amplify Studio. See you next time.